This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Earthwise, Environment and Peace with Justice interviews on Plains FM 96.9.
Welcome to Earthwise. I'm Lois Griffiths. For today's program, Martin and I will be phoning Melbourne to discuss some of the issues that concern Australian environmentalists. We'll be talking with Kirsten Slatterly of ACF, the Australian Conservation Federation.
Well, Lois and I decided to interview Kirsten Slattery after reading an article in Green Left Weekly called "Exporting Our Shame: Australia's Dirty Little Secrets." Not a very nice title. The article was written jointly by Christian, the ACF Stop Adani campaigner, and David Sweeney, the ACF anti-nuclear campaigner. Welcome to Earthwise, Christian Slattery of the Australian Conservation Federation.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, Christian, I've read that ACF was formed 53 years ago out of concerns that oil drilling and mining were threatening the Great Barrier Reef. This is still a major concern, isn't it?
Yes, the ACF is Australia's national environment organisation. We are one of the oldest environment organisations in the country, and for, as you say, 53 years now, been campaigning to protect Australia's natural environment from the threats to it. And as you say, 53 years ago when we were formed, we were deeply concerned about oil drilling and mining physically on the Great Barrier Reef. Now, since then, of course, the reef has achieved World Heritage listing and is nationally protected, but it's still under grave threat from mining and from oil. And, of course, that threat now is not necessarily because of physical drilling on the Great Barrier Reef, but because of the contribution of oil, coal and gas to climate change, which is bleaching the coral reefs on the Great Barrier Reef, acidifying the oceans and placing them at total peril. They are imperiled by the threat of climate change.
Now, the Resources Minister, Matt Canavan, he's been to India recently, is that correct?
Yeah, Matt Canavan is the Resources Minister in our Conservative coalition government, and he went on a trade tour to India and Bangladesh recently. Documents that we obtained showed that on that tour, he was ostensibly there to lobby Indian and Bangladesh politicians about purchasing Australian coal.
Because Australia does export.
It sounds as if in over those 53 years, nothing much has changed. Not for the better, by the sound of it.
We've in the past, what year was it? We interviewed Cam Walker, Friends of the Earth, in 2014 about the Adani project, and it's still in the cards, isn't it? Now, just tell us, who is Adani? Who or what is Adani?
Well, the Adani Group is a massive Indian energy infrastructure, logistics, agriculture conglomerate owned by one of the wealthiest men in India, Gautam Adani. And they are proposing via one of their subsidiary companies in Australia to build a big new thermal coal mine in central Queensland. This would be one of the largest coal mines in the world. It'd be the largest in Australia. It'd be the largest in the Southern Hemisphere. 60 million tonnes of coal per year being exported overseas. And perhaps what's worse is that, if it can get worse than that, is that that coal mine and the infrastructure needed to support it would facilitate up to 8 more coal mines in the Galilee Basin. The Galilee Basin is a thermal coal basin in central Queensland. It's one of the largest proposed expansions of coal mining on the planet, and it's one of the planet's biggest carbon bombs, along with oil drilling in the Arctic, the deforestation of the Amazon, the Canadian tar sands. The Galilee Basin really is Australia's most potential, greatest potential threat to the world's climate.
And because of the ridiculous way the emissions trading scheme works, Australia doesn't have to pay any credits for this because it won't be burnt in Australia. Am I right there?
Yeah, that's an issue of real tension, isn't it? Is that this idea that under the international framework, the sort of carbon accounting framework, emissions that are produced, emissions are attributed to the country where the fossil fuel is burnt. So in the case of exported emissions, despite the fact that Australia is the world's largest exporter of coal and one of the world's largest exporters of gas, those emissions are not attributed to Australia. They are attributed to the emissions in the countries where they're burnt. But I think that doesn't detract from the moral responsibility that Australia has to do something about these emissions. And there's very good economic reasons for it as well. We have our hands on really important levers that control the supply of fossil fuels to the international market. And in a time of climate crisis, we need all hands at the pump to be reducing the contribution of coal, oil and gas into the atmosphere.
Well, certainly this idea of creative accounting isn't morally strong. I mean, there is opposition to what's happening, isn't there, or what is proposed?
Look, the Stop Adani campaign, which has been running really for 9 years, there's been concerted grassroots campaigning against the Galilee Basin, the exploitation of the Galilee Basin and the Adani coal mine. And that has grown to develop into the largest climate campaign in Australian history. There have been tens of thousands of people who've taken action, whether that be rallying in the streets, writing to their politicians, campaigning during election time. It has really, I think, galvanised the Australian climate movement and helped to create space for, the next push, which is to ensure that over the next 12 years, Australia reduces its emissions.
Now, we're talking about an area, it's called the Galilee Basin. It's central Queensland. It's not that far from the coast, is it?
It's a few hundred kilometres inland from the coast.
Australia's so big, I just look at a map.
Australia is a big place. Queensland's a very large state as well, but that doesn't detract from the fact that the coal will be transported by rail to the coast and then shipped through the Great Barrier Reef World Heritage Area. So despite the fact that the mines might be a long way inland, their direct impact on places like the Great Barrier Reef is still quite significant. And then their indirect impact through the burning of those emissions in other countries, the burning of that coal in other countries, producing emissions, which, of course, further worsens the climate crisis.
And I believe the company, the Adani company, is having the cheek or effrontery to ask for taxpayers to build a railway, are they, rather than building it themselves.
Well, look, you've actually hit on one of, I think, the most successful moments in the Stop Adani campaign so far, which was that a few years ago, the Adani company had tendered for $1 billion concessional loan from the federal government. And there was enormous outrage, as you would expect, in Australia about that. And that outrage culminated in the Queensland state government vetoing that loan as a result of the community pressure that built in the lead up to an election. So there is no more public funding for the rail line. But of course, Adani and other fossil fuel companies in Australia get huge taxpayer handouts in the form of credits for diesel fuel, in the form of free access to groundwater, cheap access to river water. And right now there's a royalties deal on the table with the Queensland government, which could see the Adani company pocket between $250 and $700 million.
What are the politics here? The Galilee Basin's a huge area. I suppose prehistorically it was forested and eventually becomes this huge coal basin. Is this state-owned land? Is this publicly owned land? Or what is the situation?
Well, there has been for some time, you know, for many thousands of years, Aboriginal ownership of that land. And in fact, one of the some of the most strident opponents of the Carmichael coal mine, Adani's coal mine in the Galilee Basin, have been the local First Nations people, the Wangan and Jagalingu people. Australia's what's known as native title law, which is effectively the law in this country that regulates Indigenous ownership of land, is stacked against Aboriginal people. It gives them a right to negotiate, but it doesn't give them a right to say no to these projects. And so they're essentially coerced into signing on. Despite that, the Wangan and Jagalingu people have opposed Adani's coal mine for many years. And shamefully, though, just in the last couple of months, the Queensland government compulsorily acquired their land and has granted tenure over it to the Adani company.
Queensland government took over the land. That's you're getting into the politics now, aren't we? And the federal government is sympathetic with the Queensland government, I assume.
Well, it's very interesting. I think I think the entire Adani affair will be remembered as a very shameful and sordid time in Australian politics, because our federal government is a conservative right-wing coalition of parties from the right of Australian politics, but at a state level, it's the ostensibly centre-left Labor government.
In Queensland.
Of course.
Yes.
In Queensland, that's right. They were the ones who vetoed the $1 billion loan, ultimately, but just recently with some of the protests that have been blossoming, particularly around the Extinction Rebellion movement, the state Queensland government have been moving to crack down on protesters with some fairly draconian posturing and laws being rushed through the parliament.
I don't like the sound of that. And one of the concerns has to do with water, doesn't it? How is it felt that this Carmichael mine under Adani ownership, this huge mine that they want, how is that going to affect local water?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with the Adani mine is there's every way you look at it, it is an environmental disaster, be it the emissions that it will produce, be it the damage it will do to native species, and then as you say, the enormous water demand for this mine. So firstly, they are proposing to guzzle up to 12.5 billion litres of water per year from a river in central Queensland. So they'll pump that water out of the river, pipe it to the mine site, and then use that to spray it over the mine site to keep the dust down. And then they will also use that water to wash the coal. If they wash the coal, they can get a higher price for it when they sell it overseas. But that's not the only water demand of the coal mine. They also pump out huge volumes of groundwater, up to 9.5 billion litres of groundwater per year. So that's 20 billion litres total, up to 20 billion total, 20 billion litres total per year. And that groundwater will be extracted and also used on the mine site. I think it's important to remember that Australia is in a record-breaking drought, and central Queensland in particular is suffering through an unprecedented drought. So it's quite extraordinary that our governments are not only allowing but actually helping to facilitate coal mines that are taking water from our natural environment, but also farmers and other inland rural communities who rely on that water to survive.
From what I've read, there's been quite a disaster from the beginning to the rivers. It has to partly cotton farming, isn't there, in Queensland? Is that right?
In parts of Queensland and all through the Murray-Darling Basin. I mean, there are huge issues with water management in Australia. And I think, though, one of the emerging areas of research is really looking at the huge water impacts of coal mines. There's presently underground in drinking catchments, and you know, it's extraordinary, really, that this is allowed to take place.
You're listening to Earthwise, broadcasting in Christchurch on Plains FM 96.9, in Hamilton on Free FM, and in Waikanae on Coast Access FM. Today's guest is Christian Slattery of the Australian Conservation Federation, speaking from Melbourne.
Another aspect to think of is how are we contributing to the welfare of Indians, the people of India, because the air pollution there is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's one of the reasons why countries like India and China are moving away from coal-fired power. Sure, their energy demands are rising and there are still coal-fired power stations being built there, but they also have incredibly aggressive plans to build renewable energy. And that's motivated by the fact that the particulate matter from coal-fired power stations is killing people in India. So in the article that Dave and I wrote, we refer to a medical a paper in the medical journal The Lancet that concluded 1.2 million deaths in 2017 in India were attributable to air pollution, and burning coal for thermal power was a major source of that air pollution. So it's very contradictory for our politicians in Australia to claim that selling our coal is alleviating poverty in developing countries, which is what they shamefully claim, when in fact our coal is contributing to, firstly, to climate change, which will hit the world's poorest first and worst, but also to extreme air pollution in these cities. And I think that it's important, though, for us to remember that some of the many advantages that Australia has as a developed country is access to renewable energy technology. And we have a responsibility as a developed country to help developing countries develop in a way that doesn't lead to, you know, deaths of millions of people from air pollution, to help them by transferring renewable energy technology and money to help build that technology. And frankly, it's in our self-interest as well, because Australia is one of the worst the countries that will be worst hit by climate change. We're already an arid country. The Great Barrier Reef is under severe threat from climate change. So we should be doing whatever we can to facilitate the growth of renewable energy in developing countries.
And do you know what? New Zealand should be helping you. I don't know if you know this story. You know the All Blacks World Cup rugby's taking part. Sorry, the World Cup rugby's taking place in Japan. And New Zealand All Blacks are being sponsored by, and big letters on their uniforms, AIG.
Which is a giant insurance company. And without insurance, these coal companies couldn't get into business, could they?
That's right. And AIG is one of the potential insurers of the Adani coal mine. So a number of groups in Australia and I know across the water in New Zealand as well are calling on AIG to rule out any further involvement in the Adani coal mine. And of course they should do that, because, you know, New Zealand and Australia are obviously part of the South Pacific. Many of our regional partners are already facing extreme impacts from climate change, and we have a responsibility as a nation to do all we can to assist them.
And we should call out the All Blacks. they are national heroes. The article, two of you wrote it, David Sweeney, the anti-nuclear campaign. I've seen a news item recently that there's planning a new uranium mine in Western Australia on Aboriginal land without the permission of the traditional owners.
That's the Yeelirrie uranium mine in Western Australia that was signed off by the federal government literally hours before our last election was called, and signed off with the full knowledge that it would lead to the extinction of 11 species.
Yes, I believe your last election was a great surprise to most people, and I've read that Facebook campaigning was very largely responsible for a last-minute victory of the Liberals, because they targeted individual voters on their choices of customer preference and all that sort of thing, and all this modern technology is swinging elections in an undesirable way.
Well, I appreciate...
Look, yes, I think the best way to understand the most recent Australian election is to think of it as Australia's 2016 US election. The polls were all wrong. Everyone expected that the centre-left Labor Party would be elected into government, but they weren't. And there are a whole range of reasons for that. You've touched on one of them. Another very salient reason is that one of Australia's biggest coal billionaires, Clive Palmer, poured $60 million into advertising across the country, television, billboards, radio, online.
And it works.
Seemingly, to prevent the Labor government being formed.
And it works, doesn't it? This huge amount of money being spent on advertising. It works.
Well, they're promoting jobs, weren't they? Just the jobs.
That was one of the debates that played out in the election, and I think the Labor Party had a somewhat confused line about the impact of its environmental policies on our economy, and the Coalition Conservative Party really exploited that by claiming that Labor's policies, well, by lying, essentially, about the impact of Labor's policies on the economy. But I think that the challenge for progressive parties and progressive movements is to articulate a bold social and economic vision for the future, and articulate a vision of what our economic transformation is going to look like and has to look like to respond to the threat of climate change, but to do so in a way that brings people along in that journey and shows people what our society can look like in 10, 20, 30 years' time, and the opportunities that will be there for them.
That's a point Naomi Klein has made. It's not enough to say no, no to this, no to that. We need a way to say yes, yes to a future that is sustainable and is just for all people, including...
That's right, yeah.
Including people in India who deserve to have decent air to breathe.
There's a very strong internationalist component to this. Internationalism has been a sort of core of the of thinking on the left side of politics for a very long time, and I think it's no more relevant today in the urgent need to respond in a just way to the climate crisis.
Yeah, well, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you for talking to us, Chris. And obviously your hands are full in your campaigning there.
We appreciate the work that the Australian Conservation Federation does. And I'll just put an ad for Green Left Weekly as well. That's where we read your article. So good luck over there. We've got our own problems here. Not quite the same, but a big issue here is with the rivers and loss of species. Unwanted species. We actually have wallaby, I just heard. How they got over here, but they're causing trouble in our forest. So anyway.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you for having me on.
All the best, then.
All the best.
Goodbye.
Yes, bye.
Bye.
Martin, it's interesting to hear from the Australian Conservation Federation. We have our own conservation society in New Zealand, the Forest and Bird Society. Not quite the same problems yet. I've just heard the news that Oceana Gold is being given a green light to buy land to expand its Waihi mine. Do you know what kind of mine that is?
That's gold, isn't it?
It's a gold mine, and that presents environmental problems too. Actually, Eugenie Sage opposed it, and she was overruled. That's part of
coalition politics.
Coalition governments, yes. So I admire Eugenie, and I think she was right to oppose the expansion of the Waihi mining. So mining.
And just watch out for the fallacies of this totally unworkable emissions trading scheme, which is, you used the phrase in the broadcast, creative accounting.
That's what it is.
Rather than carbon emission reductions.
And while some people are saying climate emergencies, others are just
looking
the other way. Yeah. Accepting the status quo. So, from us at Earthwise,
goodbye.
Goodbye.